reasons people have trust in it.
KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman. I've been speaking with the appellant in a recent appeal of a police misconduct case before the Portland City Council.
You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Next up is Transpositive PDX, which is pre-recorded, and after that will be Calculated Conversation, which is also pre-recorded today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The More Who Die, The Less We Care, Confronting Genocide and the Deadly Arithmetic of Compassion, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education in Portland. The More Who Die, The Less We Care. Why does this occur? Professor Paul Slovic will discuss why people and governments ignore mass murder and genocide. His most recent work examines psychic numbing and the failure to respond to mass human tragedies. Again, that's The More Who Die, The Less We Care, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, 724 Northwest Davis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Montana morning.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. The season finale features singer-songwriter Dave Stamey performing songs of the American West.
That's Dave Stamey on Friday, May 17th at the Reedwood Friends Church at 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. Doors at 7, concert 7:30 p.m.
Cowboy poet Tom Swearingen will open, and the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Committee will announce the 2019-20 season.
For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Sweetgrass County line, down where the Everstone flows, sunlit.
I must be the perfect boy, the fastest, the smartest, the strongest, the best, the perfect boy. Out-achieve, out-accomplish, out-perform, out-run, out-scramble, out-do everyone, the perfect one.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland State University, offering a master's degree in urban and regional planning for those who want to shape cities into inclusive, vibrant, and livable communities. More information online at www.planning@portlandstate.org.
You just heard a piece from the contemporary chamber opera titled As One, which was performed by the Portland Opera Company for a five-night run in the tail end of March. You're listening to Transpositive PDX here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Jean Bryant. I use she and her pronouns. I will be your host for Transpositive tonight, as we take a look at some fascinating trans representation in the arts. As One was created by composer Laura Kaminsky, along with her collaborators, award-winning filmmaker Kimberly Reed and librettist Mark Campbell. It sings us the story of the sole protagonist, a fictional trans woman named Hannah, and it traces her existential journey through her transition. It debuted in New York City about 5 years ago, back in 2014, and has since then become the most produced chamber opera in, I think, North America over the past 5 years. I am not an opera goer. I was kind of turned on to this by a friend who pointed it out to me, and I was able to attend one of the performances here back in March. And I was just absolutely inspired. I was immediately trying to get hold of anybody that I could interview for the show about this, but I was so lucky to get telephone interviews with both Laura and Kimberly. Now, this first interview is with Laura, and she is currently composer in residence at American Opera Projects and a member of the faculty of the School of Arts and Conservatory of Music at Purchase College in the State University System of New York, where she's head of the composition department and where she served as dean from 2004 to 2008. I am privileged to be speaking with Laura Kaminsky. She is the composer of the chamber opera As One. Laura, give us some perspective on how you, as an opera composer, ever came to the idea of composing an opera like As One, which is a story about a trans person's life experience. This is a little bit surprising to a lot of us.
Well, first of all, Jean, it's great to be on your show. And I'm always happy to talk about As One, because this story that Mark Campbell and Kimberly Reed and I have created tells the story of this beautiful person named Hannah trying to figure out their journey. And Hannah's a great character, and it was just a delight giving her a musical life. So the idea for me was that, and I had never thought I wanted to write an opera, and in all honesty, I wasn't a big opera fan. I didn't tend to go to the opera a lot. I grew up much more on musical theater and popular vocal music than I did on traditional opera. As I've gotten into this world, the more I think about it, I think of opera basically as a story that needs to be told with song. And so that, as its simplest definition, gives you a lot of freedom as a composer to think about what the story would be, why it needs to be told in song, and what kind of structure and vocal sound world it needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually never thought about writing an opera about a trans person at all, was one of those aha moments that came to me. When I had that moment, I knew there was no turning back.
So before you bridge to that piece, Laura, can you explain to me or to the audience the difference in roles between the composer and the librettist?
Sure. And in fact, As One is a little bit anomalous. The librettist, and in this case, we have two librettists, Mark and Kim, are the people who write the words. They tell the story. And the composer takes those words and sets them to music.
Okay.
And the best opera, in my view, is where the composer and librettist together share the same vision for the story that is being told.
Okay.
That it's understood by both the word side and the music side. What are the messages of the story? Why are these characters doing what they're doing and saying what they're saying? Why do these things happen? What is the energy around that? What are the embedded meanings? What are the metaphors? What are the what's the purpose of this story?
Uh-huh.
And so in this particular case, it was me who came up with the idea of wanting to write an opera about a trans person. And when I first embarked on that quest, I didn't know much about opera, and I didn't know any librettists, and I didn't have any opera companies that were interested in this idea, but it just was something that really stuck with me. And it came about because I have been following for many years marriage equality, because when my wife and I got married and we went to Canada, we couldn't do it in the U.S., and we were following each state as it was voting independently, one state at a time.
Well, that certainly
and
sets morning, the context and time frame for when you were thinking of this, yeah.
Yeah, this is now, I mean, we got married in Vancouver in 2005, mm-hmm. and I started thinking about this piece in probably 2011.
Uh-huh.
I read an article about an upcoming vote in a state, and I was like, oh, well, this is a blue state. They're probably going to pass this law. One day, maybe, this will go to the Supreme Court, and it will become national rather than state by state. And I wasn't particularly that interested, but then the focus of this article was what woke me up. And it was following a married couple, a husband and wife, with two kids living in a suburban town. And the husband was in the process of transitioning. And if the law did not pass, when he completed his transition, and this couple was determined to stay together because they loved each other as human beings, they would no longer be a heterosexual couple. They would be a lesbian couple. And therefore, by the state's law, they would no longer be married. And it just hit me.
Yes.
Wow, what does one sacrifice in order to become fully oneself? And what does that do to your personal interactions and relationships, your own sense of self, your loved ones and colleagues and friends' sense of yourself, and the quality of the relationship that you have with all these people? What are you willing to give up? What do you gain? There's got to be losses along the way, but there's got to be the joy of finally being oneself. And how does that change things?
Yeah.
And I sat there and I looked at my wife. I said, I don't know. This must become an opera. There's no other way to tell the story. It spoke to me as song, that somehow this journey of self-discovery and truth had to be sung. And that was how the idea for As One originated.
Mm-hmm. I was going to observe that, you know, my own experience being in the audience, because this piece is so multi-layered, one of the things that struck me is that the libretto, the story itself, the storyline, was so refreshing that it was looking at the very deeply existential, personal experience of Hannah, the protagonist, and does not get into some of the more socio-political things that, you know, in our community, our, you know, trans population tend to dominate a lot of our work, a lot of what we talk about, a lot of what the narrative tends to be. You really dialed in on that very, very deeply personal element of the trans experience. That's
well,
wonderful.
Thank you. I think that was really clear from the very beginning, that for this piece to speak not just as a representation of the trans issues for trans people, but to be universal and relatable so that all human beings get it and understand that trans people are people who are trying to find themselves, and we all spend our whole lives trying to find ourselves no matter what, that it would become a much more powerful and memorable artistic experience if it was told from a personal human perspective rather than from a political social agenda.
Yeah, this is self-actualization writ large. I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole point, that the little bits of the story that stick for most people are things that everybody remembers from their growing up, and they're having to separate from their family, and they're feeling out of place in school, and they're feeling like they're not being seen for who they are, or being seen for who they are, or feeling scared, mm-hmm. and realizing that who you are could maybe not be such a good thing. And all of those are of course, happened with the trans experience, but it's something that all human beings feel. And of course, one of the things that Kim, who is trans, always talks about is we're all transitioning all our lives. You're not just born and you're just this solid, fully realized human being from the minute you're born. We change all the time.
Hopefully.
Yes, one would hope. Maybe those who don't change are really changing. Well, that's a whole other existential conversation.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we also knew was that telling this story of this person that Kim and Mark made up, I mean, Hannah is not a real person, is that this is one story. This is not the trans story. This is a human being finding themselves who happens to be trans. There's metaphors that are universal. There's specific issues that are trans-only issues, but the undercurrent, the human existential issues are human. Mm-hmm. And so we're not saying this is the trans opera. We're saying this is Hannah's story. It's the story of Hannah finding truth.
And beautifully done. Can you speak to one of the things that another thing that struck me about the piece musically, which is, you know, obviously your work exclusively, is how, and I'm not a musician, I'm not sure I can use the right phrasing here, but how discordant and how kind of edgy the music is. And it starts that way, and almost from the first note to the last, it conveys discord. It conveys conflict, stress, almost all the way through it. I mean, that was my takeaway from it, Laura.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I think that there are definitely parts where there is the anguish of doubt and the fear of finally understanding that there's so much violence against trans people, the discomfort during hormone therapy. Those sections were definitely written to have grit and angst and discord in them.
Mm-hmm.
But the opening scene, young Hannah on a bicycle delivering newspapers, is a moving piece, and it's sort of, you know, playful and joyful, as is the scene in the library when Hannah just to know I found myself.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite piece.
Yeah, I think for a long time Kim and Mark and I always called that our favorite, and then we thought we were being mean to our other children, so we kind of shifted around. But yeah, that one kind of resonates. But that music isn't really discordant. It's warm, and it's got rhythmic fluidity to it, so that there's a sense of motion and flow, because that's how life progresses.
That's true.
There's the scene Perfect Boy, when Hannah's just trying so hard to suppress the truth, and so has to do better and be better at everything. And I wrote this piece to be relentless, but it's this pulsing, pounding music, and the joke of it, it's called Perfect Boy. I must be the perfect boy, the fastest, the smartest, the strongest, the best, straight A's, star quarterback, and it's like a litany. I wrote it in such a way that it can almost never be done perfectly. It's meant to make the person singing it crazy, because the pulse remains the same the whole time. It's just that, all the way through.
Yeah.
But there are accents that are sometimes groups of six and sometimes groups of five, and they don't line up. So that means 6 times 5 is 30. It's only every 30 pulses that they're in the same place. And the whole point is that they're never going to get it right.
Yeah.
And it drives everybody crazy. And it's like, good, you're actually being forced to sing the truth.
Uh-huh. Thank you. That's a great example. I mean, musically, this piece, and not just that one part of the whole project, evokes these very real, experientially, you really achieved something here, Laura, with the music in this piece.
Well, thank you. I think for me, this being my first opera, and I really had no idea what I was doing, I actually gave Mark and Kim some constructs to begin with. I had worked with a brilliant married couple, singers, Sasha Cook, a mezzo-soprano, and Kelly Markgraf, baritone, on a different project. And after working with them, I just knew that I wanted to do more with them. So when I came upon this idea of telling a trans story through opera, I wanted them to be in it. And then I had this flash. I actually want them to be the one character. I want this to be like a monodrama where the male and female of the same person is in dialogue with self throughout the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked them, would you consider, I have no idea what I'm doing, but if this ever becomes real, would you consider singing it? And they kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, that sounds cool, sure. And then that got me hooked. Like, okay, I've got two of, like, the greatest singers who really said that they would commit their time and energy. I'm going to make this happen. And then I knew that I couldn't have a full orchestra because I wanted this to be so intimate, just two singers playing one role. That's when I knew I needed a string quartet, which is the ensemble configuration from the lowest note of the cello to the highest note of the violin is the most unified as one of any ensemble configuration. And I had just completed a very rewarding project with the magnificent Fry Street Quartet about sustainability and climate change, and asked them if they would consider doing this. And they said, oh my God, this sounds fantastic. So when I connected up with Kim, who was the first one who joined the team, I discovered her through her film Prodigal Sons.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, Rebecca, could tell that I was really serious about this project. And so she kept giving me homework. You know, here's a book to read. Here's a movie.
Yeah.
And when we watched Prodigal Sons, at the end of that evening, I looked at Rebecca and said, that's going to be a collaborator. I have to find Kimberly Reed. So then I knew we were going to have a film. So Kim and I began imagining this piece, but we still didn't have, you know, a professional librettist on board. I mean, she's a writer and by now is writing her own libretti. But back then we needed a trained librettist. And then I met Mark and we were sitting on a panel judging opera grants at Opera America. And I just thought he was very brilliant and interesting. So I told him about the project and he was interested. And that's how it got born. But I said to them, I don't know what the story is, but you have this construct, two singers, male and female, who play one person transitioning across their young, you know, their youth to young adulthood from male to female in a dialogue with self, supported by a string quartet in an environment that's created by an original film.
What a wonderful concept you came up with there.
Go figure it out. And we sat down a few times together and kind of, you know, Mark asked Kim, you know, tell us about being in elementary school. Tell us what it was like to play on the football team. And started collecting stories of Kim's life. And these stories, she would tell a story and I'd go, yeah, well, I wasn't trans, but I sure felt like that. And Mark would say, well, yeah, I felt like that. And we knew that we were finding these universal truths that could make our character relatable. And so then they told me to go away, that they need to actually write. And they came up with these beautiful different vignettes that take us on Hannah's journey.
I have a question. One of the things that I didn't really quite fully understand until I went back and read more about the piece, but the jump to Norway, you know, as the final, I didn't quite really understand the jump there. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. I think that, and that's the question that people always ask. I will say this is opera, so you take leaps of faith in opera.
Mm-hmm.
I think what was clear when they were constructing this story of Hannah was that here's a kid like every other kid, except something's different, and it takes a while to figure out what that difference is, and then it takes a while to acknowledge it and to start to transition to be fully realized. And then there's the scene when Hannah is attacked. People always ask, Kim was never attacked. This is not autobiographical.
Right.
But there is so much violence against trans people that we felt it would be wrong to not include that in this opera,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the catalyst in a way. So what happens is after Hannah is attacked and gets home and is safe and starts to do research and realizes, oh my God, I'm not alone. There's a whole world of trans people and we're not safe. I've got to figure myself out. I need to get away from everything and find that space for reflection, to go through my own head shift so mm-hmm. I can fully be myself.
Now the vision quest.
It's the vision quest.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mark and Kim were like, well, where's about the remotest place you could go to? And Kim actually had a fellowship when she was a student and went to Norway.
Oh, okay.
So she said, well, why don't we set it in Norway? Because I've been there and I think I can create some, you know, descriptive a world that will feel real, that isn't just the vision quest off to the netherworld or, you know, to the paradise, that there's actually things we can reference that will make this feel real. And so that's really how it came about. It's a moment that usually is a relief after this horrific scene and awareness that there are these violent acts committed against trans people all over the world, mm-hmm. disproportionately against trans women of color. But that scene is really grueling. And at the end of it, when Hannah says, I can't take this, I can't do this anymore, I can't go on, but her other voice is saying, you've got to go on, come on, like, you know, get your act together, you got to go forward. And then she goes, okay, I'm going to go forward, I'm going on. And there's this pause, and then she says, to Norway. It's like nobody knows what's going to happen, and it's just been so painful that it just is like a relief of the tension. And then we go into, you know, the sunshine of Norway.
Uh-huh. Okay. That explains...
So it's,
no pun intended, that explains that transition.
Yeah, I mean, it works theatrically because of the emotional buildup to give that relief. And then, of course, her final, you know, revelation that she can be herself is filled with all the bumps along the way. So it's kind of like, I always joke to Mark and Kim, you wrote a Shaggy Dog story. Like, now what's going to go wrong on her trip in Norway? You know, the berries are rotten, the boat has a leak, she can't find the Northern Lights, it's all terrible. The cabin smells like a goat, it's not really a cabin, you know. You know, it's just like, oh my God, everything is terrible, but she finally is alone with herself and goes, yeah, and I get up every day and here's the world and wow, you can be happy. Just like, go make better jam with those berries, you know, fix the leak in the boat, get up and own yourself.
That's a great way to bring that all around. Speaking of bringing it all around, We are, yeah. I see that we are really bumped up against the time frame here. So, do you want to get some last words in here, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been so incredibly gratifying for all three of us who have created the piece is that it has caught on. And I'm not sure exactly what number the Portland Opera production was and what number the Eugene Opera, but the fact that we're in two cities in Oregon in the space of a season, we're close to 30 productions in the last four seasons, and there's, you know, a whole bunch that we're telling this story all over the country to all kinds of communities, and it's touching people. And what's great is sometimes, you know, we're getting diehard opera fans who are like, all right, it's on the subscription series. I'm not really interested in contemporary opera, and I don't really care about trans issues particularly, but I bought my tickets, so I'll go. And they come away transformed. And then sometimes we have people from the LGBT community who come because of the subject matter, who've never been to an opera. And they come away having had a good artistic experience. Mm-hmm. So it's like the learning goes in multiple directions. I mean, so the fact that this story, you know, this musical story, is being shared with so many different kinds of people and having such an impact, is just, we're so grateful. And we're so grateful to this growing community of artists. I believe there's close to 40 people now who have sung the role of Hannah.
Wow.
Some having done so many, many times. And we're really excited that, you know, in just a month, the original cast album is going to be released.
Oh.
So we reunited with Sasha and Kelly and the Fry Street Quartet and conductor Steve Osgood last summer in Utah and recorded it, and it's about to be released. So it will be able to reach even more people. We're really excited about that.
That is exciting. I look forward to that. And you mentioned the Eugene performances that are coming up, and I might as well go ahead and plug that. That's in the Eugene Opera. It's in the Sorang Theater at the Holt Center, May 17th and May 19th down in Eugene. And for anybody in Portland who didn't get the Portland Opera performances, it's not too far to drive. It's worth it.
Yeah, and there's great hiking around there, too.
Yes, there is. Well, thank you so very much, Laura, for your time today. And again, my congratulations on just a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Thank you so much. It was great chatting with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Been listening to the interview with Laura Kaminsky, the composer of the chamber opera As One. You're listening to Transpositive PDX here on KBOO Portland. I'm Jean Bryant, your host. We're going to go to a quick music break. I'm going to play an excerpt from the opera. It's titled To Know. And when we come back, we'll have the interview with co-librettist Kimberly Reed.
To the card catalog, thumb through the cards, my hands turn.
Welcome back. You're listening to KBOO-FM. This is the Transpositive Show, and I'm Jean Bryant. You just heard a piece titled To Know, in which the protagonist, Hannah, first really discovers that she's not alone in the world in of her trans experience. Next, we're going to do an interview with co-librettist Kimberly Reed. Kimberly Reed is probably best known for her work in film. Her film Prodigal Sons premiered at the Telluride Film Festival and garnered 14 international awards. Her most recent work, Dark Money, is now out. It came out last year at the Sundance Film Festival. So as co-librettist, Kimberly Reed actually ended up co-writing the storyline and the lyrics or as one, though that's not what she set out to do. She was first approached to use her visual arts skills to help set the stage for the opera. This is Jean Bryant. This is Transpositive PDX, and I am speaking this evening with Kimberly Reed. She is an award-winning filmmaker, storyteller, very accomplished storyteller. And the context of this conversation is her role in the chamber opera As One, which was performed here in Portland back in March. Kimberly, can you tell us kind of how you came to be a librettist in the opera genre?
Well, I really approach opera from the world of film. That's my background. That's what I studied. And I guess I've always just been attracted to stories in film that are really big and bold and like big emotions and probably too much just to fit into one film. So when an opera composer named Laura Kaminsky came to me and said, originally we were just talking about me making a film for her opera that she wanted to compose, and that sounded like a really interesting stretch for me that I wanted to be involved in, because I had just at that time come off of a film called Prodigal Sons that I guess it took about 5 years to make. And the thing is with the theater, with opera, the time cycles tend to be a lot quicker. And I wanted to just create experimental films that we would be projected, this is our idea initially, that we'd be projected onto multiple screens, and then that would mean that the companies that produce the opera wouldn't need to build a bunch of expensive sets and use them three or four times and then throw them out or have to store them or ship them around the country. Yeah. And that's kind of what makes opera so expensive.
Yeah.
So originally I was just talking to Laura about making films that would kind of take the place of the set building. But in the process of discussing the piece with her, she had the idea to make an opera that was essentially about the journey of one trans person. And when I met her, she already had the idea to have that one person depicted by two different singers, these two different singers that were pretty much representing the spectrum of, you know, the gender polarity that our society is often stuck in.
So she actually came to you with the idea of an opera that has a singular trans experience protagonist?
Well, yeah, I mean, she had the idea to have, she wanted to tell a story about a trans character.
Okay.
And she had the idea to have that depicted, represented by, you know, representing these two poles of gender by two different singers. And she actually had two very specific singers in mind that she wrote the piece with them in mind because they were very well known and had agreed to do it. So that's those things were in place when she came to me to talk about making a film for it, which I did.
Uh-huh.
But in doing so, and in the process of discussing the piece, it was just very natural for me to talk about my own experience as a trans person, and our discussions led to that. But you know, I had never written a libretto before, which is, for those of you who aren't opera fans, it's just the written text that gets sung for an opera. Sometimes people are familiar with the musical terms,
uh-huh,
where there's somebody writing the lyrics and somebody writing the book.
Right.
In opera, those two pieces are done by the same person, by the librettist. So I didn't quite know how to approach that. And frankly, I had just gotten done making Prodigal Sons, which was autobiographical.
Yes.
And I was a little bit sick of talking of myself, frankly. And
yeah,
wasn't really like super excited about going back to that autobiographical well.
To set context for the listeners, Prodigal Sons, what's Prodigal Sons came out, what, about 10 years ago now, right?
It came out in theaters in 2010.
So you said that took about 5 years for you to make, so that kind of sets context for that piece, which I do observe, you know, looking back, because I've been around a few years too, that the, you know, the great trans narrative back then had a certain approach to it, and, you know, a few years have gone by on that one. So the thought you shared there about not really wanting it to be this autobiographical thing per se, and that, you know, in the way that had been presented in the past? I mean, that, you know, the As One, the libretto.
Oh, you're saying, back talking about As
yeah, evolution,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Well, you know, I had done this long round of telling an autobiographical story, mostly because I just looked around at the time that this was coming out and came out in festivals in late 2008 and came out in theaters in 2010, and I just wasn't seeing trans people depicted on screen at all. And I very rarely, and if they were, they weren't being depicted by trans people.
Right.
You were always getting, you know, somebody who was not trans telling the story. And it makes it a very, very different experience.
Yeah. Well,
and
that's even in the context of a more mainstream media. I mean, opera just, it struck me that, I mean, of all the genres of arts, that not only would there be, you know, a trans artist involved in it, that the storyline of the opera itself is about a trans person. It almost shocked me that this would be, you know, in an opera genre.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's kind of, I think the opera world is a little bit, I wouldn't say that the opera world is shocked, but I would say that the opera world is, I mean, the story has proven very, very popular. We've had a bunch of productions, like more than any other opera, which for me is great that there's, you know, a relative, there's a new opera, is about a trans character. It's by three creators, one who's me, a trans woman, and the composer's a lesbian woman, and my co-librettist is a gay man, and you know, we're at the helm of this project that is telling trans positive stories to people in an art form that aren't, you know, really known for being groundbreaking and modern. The opera world is kind of more interested in sometimes in listening to those 400-year-old Italian pieces. Yeah. So, yeah, we're kind of shaking it up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, so let's talk about your actual experience in co-writing this libretto with Mark Campbell, who you mentioned just a second ago. Tell us about that experience. I mean, how did that go for you? I mean, how did that evolve to come to the way that that Hannah, who is the protagonist in As One, is presented is not. I was surprised there as well, honestly, Kimberly. No one in my experience has ever tried to really present trans experience in quite the same way that you and Mark wrote this. I think closest in my experience I've ever seen would be a written piece by Susan Stryker, you know, her words to, you know, Victor Frankenstein. This deeply existential approach that you guys took, and I'm fascinated by that.
Mm. Well, the first thing is, you know, we're kind of depicting these two sides, these two poles of gender, which are the poles that our society presents us. And I'll tell you what we didn't want to do. We didn't want to kind of pit them against each other or start out with this, I think, kind of a typical trans narrative where you kind of start at A and you end up at Z, and by the time you get to Z, you never talk about A. You know what I mean? We wanted to take these two poles, these two sides, and really have them swirl together into one person instead of falling into what, for me, has kind of become this trope of this, you know, big transition story where you start as one person and then poof, something magic happens and you become a different person. And that's just has not been my experience.
Not mine.
The experience. Yeah. or the trans folk around me. Yeah. And so we wanted to just kind of create that internal dialogue that I think a lot of, I certainly had, I was drawing on that experience. I think a lot of trans folk have that internal monologue that's going on, and sometimes that's very carefree and joyous and liberated mindset. Sometimes there's doubts and questions. Sometimes I think maybe we just get in our own way and take things too seriously and gotta like kind of lighten up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just telling the story of a trans person who's a human being that has a wide range of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to you know, what I think a lot of trans narratives become, which is this really tortured narrative where you're just feeling sorry for this poor person who has to go through this thing. And we didn't want to, I mean, that might be a little part of it where there's times where there's struggle, but we didn't want it to be what I think some trans stories become, where you're kind of feeling sorry for that poor person over there.
Yeah, and you accomplished that so well in this opera. That said, I think there's also some other context here, which the Hannah story is a little different than a lot of trans folks younger than I might necessarily relate to. So there are some things about this story that are set, you know, pre-internet. For instance, like my favorite piece, the one that just touched me so deeply, is To Know.
out of, you know, from you know, the performance.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I love that piece. And, yeah, it part of the reason it's set pre-internet is so that we can actually stage it. I mean, when you just have somebody looking up something in a online at home alone, it's not as dramatic as what we ended up doing in that in that scene where Hannah like goes to a library and actually has to physically look through a card catalog and goes a little bit too far and not far enough, and then the librarian discovers her looking through this thing which she's a bit ashamed and of at the time and feels like it's secret, and but then you get a show that the sense of discovery and realization that she's not alone in the world, that she's not the only person who feels like she feels, and that's a really wonderful feeling the first time you feel it, that there are other people in the same situation as you.
Yes, it is. And back in the day, that was quite actually the revelation for many of us. Another piece that I want to point to out of the performance is Three Words. That's another one that just it struck me. It just struck me. And these are just a couple of examples. And Three Words is about the first time Hannah is ever properly gendered in her identity, and what a thrill that is. Just as an example, these are a couple of examples of your approach in telling this story. It's so multi-layered, Kimberly. Between the libretto itself, the story itself, and then what you brought to the project with the use of visual art in setting context, together with Laura's composition. It's just an incredibly multi-layered piece. I mean, what a project.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing that really, it's what attracts me to filmmaking. It's what attracts me to opera, which is, of course, the forerunner to film. And it's multidisciplinary. You know, sometimes there's this visual component that's maybe drawing a little bit more of the audience's attention, and it's all, you know, kind of floating on this music that's illustrating the visuals or illustrating the drama that's taking place. And of course, what you try to do is like get all of those different elements, this musical element and the dramatic element and the visual element, on get them all talking to each other and building these heightened emotions that, you know, maybe we experience in life, but that's what I like about film and opera, is we can kind of heighten all of those emotions and make them particularly pointed. So I'm glad you had that experience.
And I most certainly did. What I'd like to talk with you now about is, you know, it's been, about 5 years now since As One was first performed. And it's been, as we said, it's been performed maybe a lot more than you or Laura or anybody ever really expected. And it's being performed more all the time. It's really caught on. But in those 5 years, Kimberly, what are kind of some of your takeaways now? You had these objectives in what kind of a piece you wanted to present. And what are your takeaways now that there's been a lot of productions, a lot of performances? Have you learned anything? Any aha moments here?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I really love is when the people who come to the opera are, and this is not uncommon, that about roughly half of the folks who are there are sort of opera people who are being introduced to some new subject material that they maybe hadn't considered before, and I love that. And a lot of times there's trans and queer non-binary folks who show up and they've never been to an opera before, so I love introducing them to opera and the fact that that can be a really moving and dramatic art form that they maybe didn't consider because of the probably really justifiable prejudgments that they had about the form of opera. So that's one thing, is that it's refreshing to bring some new subject matter to the opera world.
Mm-hmm.
And to the
queer world. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
There are a lot of us in performing arts, but I mean, specifically the opera genres. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, on one level, it is really simple. When you, it sounds so basic that it sounds ridiculous when I say it, but it turns out if you take words and you sing them, that can just be really emotionally powerful. I mean, we all know that from pop songs. And you string a bunch of those together over about an hour and a half and tell a story with it. It can be a really, if you just go with that, it can be a really, really dramatic and moving and touching process. There's a reason why people are crazy about opera.
That was most certainly my experience. When I was present for that.
Excellent.
Yeah. Any other, thoughts or takeaways?
I mean, that's really one thing. The other thing is that I had not worked in an opera before creating as one. Laura and Mark and I have actually done three operas since then.
Good segue, because I was going to point out to the audience that you've been working since then as well, since you joined on As One. Yes,
more of them coming up. Laura and I are working on a project called Hometown to the World with just the two of us. It's coming up at San Francisco Opera in 2020, and sort of close to you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So things go on. But the other thing, I guess, realization is that I think that there's a lot of really interesting, innovative, vigorous work that's going on in the world of opera that is probably surprising to a lot of people, that it's not, people with horns on their heads, singing in German or Italian or something.
Not Wagner anymore, not contemporary.
Yeah. That it's you can tell real stories with real people singing in English, and it's about contemporary issues, not about things that happened in some mythical land 300 years ago.
Well, you certainly nailed it with As One. I'm just and so pleased to have had some time with you today. We're coming up on the end of our time frame here. Any last word?
I would just say that we are really, really thrilled with As One premiered in New York in September of 2014 at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And it is coming back to New York for the first time since then. And it's going to be part of the Pride celebrations this June at
excellent.
New York City Opera. And we couldn't be happier that it's taking place on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall.
Yes.
So actually my co-writer on As One, Mark Campbell, created a new opera called Stonewall, which is premiering on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. And I think that between As One and Stonewall, that we're telling some stories about trans folks that haven't been told before. And the fact that they're being celebrated, where especially, Stonewall, I think the role of trans people has been really drastically underestimated historically. So hopefully we'll be part of bringing a renewed focus onto the role that trans people played in Stonewall both 50 years ago and coming up this June here on the 50th anniversary.
Sounds like an exciting project. Congratulations on all of your successes. And thank you so much for your time today, Kimberly.
Thanks so much for having me. It's nice to talk to you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all the time we have for Transpositive tonight. You can get more information on As One at www.asone.org. I'm going to send you off tonight with a piece titled Just Three Words, in which Hannah gets gendered properly for the first time in her life. Good night.
You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. That was Transpositive PDX. And next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken. It's a pre-recorded show.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.